his new life in Nityananda. So in this verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, kama, or lust, sex life, is compared to sin, to sinful activity. Of course, this is very contrary to our modern society, which considers freedom of sex or freedom of lust to be the liberating condition. Especially during the last 10 or 20 years, this idea has become very prominent that freedom is equated with the facility to enjoy one's senses as much as possible, especially the freedom of sex, free sex, etc. So they've actually started educating their children in this subject matter, because of course they want to give the best to their children. They don't want them to be inhibited or to be uptight, whatever. So they actually educate their children in this subject matter at a very young age. 11 or 12 years old, they have classes in school. This is why Srila Prabhupada, among other reasons, called the schools in Kali Yuga slaughterhouses, because they actually destroy the intelligence and the good qualities of the children. So we can see that in that they are teaching children this subject matter of sex life at a very young age. So it is considered to be the liberated condition, freedom to enjoy the senses. Whereas the Bhagavatam says that this condition is sinful life and that it is actually the source of bondage. Sex life is not the liberated condition, but it is the bound condition. One time we were with Srila Prabhupada in South India, in Hyderabad. Prabhupada was, again, same place we were speaking of yesterday. And he was giving a darshan one night, and some elderly Indian lady came forward, and Prabhupada asked for questions. So no, there were no questions. So she thought, well, I'll ask a question, I imagine. So she raised her hand, Prabhupada said yes. She said, what is the meaning of the pastimes of Sita Ram? So, of course, there's so many things Prabhupada could have said. The purpose of the Lord's descent, yada yadahi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. There's many reasons that Krishna comes. In fact, when Krishna comes, he fulfills many reasons. But Prabhupada chose to say at that moment that the whole purpose of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes was to teach the difficulty in accepting a wife. So the lady was shocked. Prabhupada said, yes, Lord Ram descended just to show how difficult it is in accepting a wife. So in this verse it's actually mentioned that if one is very lusty, then he should fulfill, or he should try to satisfy those lusty desires in a regulated way, in a religious way. Actually, one time Prabhupada said, illicit sex or licit sex, it's all illicit. He said that one time. But anyway, if one is disturbed by these desires, then one should enter into the Grihastha ashram, and with his wife, he should beget Krishna-conscious children. Krishna actually says in Bhagavad Gita that I am sex life, which is not contrary to religious principles. So if that, as we mentioned yesterday, does not the thing which caused the disease, when used in a therapeutic way, cure the disease, that's homeopathic medicine. Homeopathic medicine mean, or even vaccinations mean, that you give a little bit of the disease in the body, and the body builds up a tolerance to the disease in a big way, so that when you come in contact with the disease, you don't come down with it, like when you get smallpox vaccination. Actually, you're becoming injected with smallpox. You're getting a little bit of smallpox. Or you get before you go to India, you get a cholera injection, or a typhoid injection. You're actually getting cholera, you're getting typhoid, but in a little tiny dose, so that the immune system in the body attacks that little germ. And because the germ is very small, it can't fight the immune system, and the immune system builds up immunity towards that disease. So in the same way, that which is the source of our bondage in the material world, if it's dovetailed in Krishna consciousness, then it can also be the source of liberation. So Krishna says, I am sex. Sex is that, the main principle of bondage to the material world. Pumsha striya mituni bhavam tayor mitu hidaya granti moho. Ho grikshetta sitapti vitar janasya moho yamahammameti. All the bondage comes from this principle of sex attraction, sex desire. So, but if that sex desire is controlled in married life, that same sex desire can be the source of liberation. This is the beauty of Krishna consciousness. It's very difficult to give up sex desire. Therefore, most of our devotees will be grihastra. In the Vedic culture, there were four ashrams, brahmachari, grihastra, vanaprastha, and sannyas. And the main section of society was actually grihastras, and they supported everyone else. So, but at the same time, the principle of renunciation is encouraged, but also encouraged in grihastha life. Prabhupada said, in our Krishna conscious movement, the men should stay brahmachari, but the women should be married. So Prabhupada said, this is the contradiction in our philosophy. Somebody looking for a contradiction in Krishna, but this is it. Better remain brahmachari, because you save yourself from so much difficulty and trouble. But at the same time, so many ladies are coming, they must be protected. A woman must be protected at all stages of her life. When she's young, by her father. When she reaches puberty, she should be married. And in the event of the death of her husband, she should return to her father, or her elder son should take care. So the women must be protected. But the men better remain. So here's the contradiction. Anyway, so therefore, sex desire can be satisfied in the grihastha ashram. And Krishna says, that sex life I am. So that sex will not bind. Therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he said, as a sannyasi, he said, he's not speaking as in the sannyasa ashram, but he's saying, if I was grihastha, I would have sex life 1,000 times if I could be sure to raise those children in Krishna consciousness. So that is the reason. So that actually is a form of renunciation, restricted sense enjoyment, a form of renunciation. Therefore, Prabhupada, one time he described our grihasthas who are strict in following this principle of sex only for the propagation of children. That means in the grihastha ashram there would be sex only a few times, because one or two or most three children, that is general, just a few children. So to beget a child, sex life is there. So one or two or three times in the whole marriage, there's the act of sex. So Prabhupada said, this is brahmachari grihastra, restrained. Sometimes we hear the saying that grihastha ashram is a, what do they say? For sex, sense enjoyment. A license for sense enjoyment is a license for sense enjoyment. But this actually applies more to the vanashram system of understanding. Because we're actually Vaishnavas. And a Vaishnava is characterized by no sense gratification. This is the idea. Lord Chaitanya said, ultimately, I am not a sannyasi, a grihastha, a vanaprastha, a brahmachari. I'm not a Brahmin. A Vaishya, Shudrasha. I am simply the servant of the Lord. So a Vaishnava is one who is actually transcendental to the modes of material nature. He's actually transcendental to the system of Varnashram Dharma. The system of Varnashram Dharma is actually meant to produce a Vaishnava, to produce one who is transcendental, a saintly person. So one can be saintly in any ashram. Grihe tako banidako. Dhartandasa Kura says, I seek the association of that devotee, whether he's grihastha or brahmachari, if he's Vaishnava, if he's devotee, surrendered to the Lord. So a Vaishnava is characterized by the fact that he's given up his interest in sense gratification. And he's simply blissfully engaged in the service of the Lord. This is how he controls his senses. So actually, this license for sense gratification, it should not be misunderstood. Not that one takes a wife and exploits the wife for sense. Oh, now I'm a grihastha, therefore I can enjoy sense gratification. One will also be bound by the laws of nature. Karma will also come upon one. Sinful reaction, misery, will come upon one who disobeys the instructions of Guru and Krishna. So sex life is always binding like that, unless it's actually used strictly in the service of the Lord. And there's very few times when that rule actually applies. So our Grihastha ashram is actually meant to be like that. It is also an ashram. An ashram means, technically in Vedic language, a seat, a place of learning. Traditionally, when we talk of ashram, we think of where one goes to serve the guru. At a young age, the brahmachari goes to serve the guru at the ashram. And there he engages in menial activities, he learns the scriptures, he serves his spiritual master, etc. So ashram. So ashram is a place of learning, a place of renunciation. So the Grihastha ashram is also meant to be a place of renunciation. Not that one marries because one is agitated so he can enjoy sense gratification. There's no sense gratification actually in Krishna consciousness. One time we were with Prabhupada in Paris, and one devotee asked Prabhupada, well, the brahmachari is not allowed to take anything for himself, and neither is the vanaprastha. So how much of the collection can the grihasthas keep? So Prabhupada smiled and he said, nothing. They can't keep anything. They're supposed to give everything to Krishna. So of course, Ishivasham idam sarvyam yat kinja jagat jam jagat tena tak tena bunjitaha magriha kasha shvindanam. Everything belongs to Krishna. But according to his position, everyone is allowed a certain quota. So the brahmachari has his quota, the sannyasi has his quota, and the grihastha hustle has his quota. Maybe different. The grihastha actually has to take more. He needs more facility because wife is there, children are there, house is needed, perhaps a car is needed, whatever. Certain facilities are needed for that particular ashram. So, but one should not take more than that. That's the idea. Certain quotas are relevant to our particular situation in life. So, what may be authorized for a grihastha may not be authorized for a sannyasi. A sannyasi is not allowed to speak with women unnecessarily. He's not allowed to associate with women. But a grihastha has to associate with women. His wife, he must preach to his wife, he must train his wife, he must feel responsible, he must take care of her materially and spiritually. So what is irreligious for one person is religious for another person. So when we say one should be renounced, that doesn't mean that everyone should be like a sannyasi or a brahmachari. But the same spirit of renunciation must be there. What is the real spirit of renunciation in Krishna consciousness? Well, that's described by Rupa Goswami. That we should not reject that which can be used in Krishna's service. That's false renunciation, because everything belongs to Krishna. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, my house, my wife, my children, it's all yours, Krishna. At your feet, I give it to you. This is the real spirit of renunciation. So this is what's important. The spirit, to give up the enjoying spirit, that I am the master of all I survey, or that I am the enjoyer, but rather to see that I am the humble servant of Krishna. And whatever ashram we feel most comfortable in, we place ourselves in that ashram. But we strictly follow the rules of that ashram. To retain the integrity of the Vanashram Dharma, or the Krishna conscious movement. But that is the point. This is real renunciation. Therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, if I could raise children, 1,000 children, make them saints, make them devotees, then I would have... Then I would have sex life so many times. But that responsibility must be there. That sense of responsibility that this service has been given to me by Krishna. Not that these children are meant for my sense enjoyment, or this position is meant for my sense enjoyment. But whatever I have, it's meant to facilitate the expansion of the Krishna conscious movement. So this is sober. This is being sober. So this is the real meaning of the Grihastha ashram. And if it is misused, it becomes something else. So grihe tako bhani tako. If this spirit is there, let me engage everything in Krishna's service. Then one will not be entangled. But it's a little dangerous, of course. Prabhupada said, when we speak strongly about women in the translation in the purports, Prabhupada said, this is not a condemnation of women as a class. We're not like preaching against women. Prabhupada said, woman is good, man is good, but the combination is not good unless it's used properly. Woman is good, man is good, but together it's something else. So woman is compared to fire and man is compared to butter. So when the fire and the butter come together, the butter melts. Therefore, there must always be this restriction. Even in Grihastha Ashram, there's a sense of formality. Even. One time Prabhupada said, Grihastha life means 75% chance of coming back. But we've also seen many sannyasis fall due to pride. So the real point is to see myself as the humble servant of Krishna and to use everything in Krishna's service. Whenever one associates with fire, one has to be careful. So even a grihastha must be careful in dealing with his wife. He cannot see his wife as a facility for sense enjoyment. But he must always see, actually, this person has been given to be my spiritual master in Krishna to raise and liberate in Krishna consciousness. According to the scriptures, women are less intelligent. So that means that, but that does not mean they cannot go back to Godhead. Because Lord Chaitanya delivered even Jagai and Madai. They're the most foolish. They were engaged in gross sinful activities. The point is everyone needs proper shelter, proper protection and proper training. So a woman takes shelter of a man for what purpose? To be protected and trained in Krishna consciousness. So grihastha life is a great responsibility. It doesn't mean a license for sense gratification. It means that now I've taken this responsibility on behalf of my spiritual master and my wife is actually the property of my guru. So the greatest sin is to enjoy the property of one's guru, to sit on the guru's bed, to use the shoes of the guru, to eat off the plate of the guru. All these things, it's suicide, spiritual suicide for a disciple. So if one wants to be protected from the risk in associating with a woman or a woman associating with a man, one must always remain very ditta, very sober. How do we remain sober? We always remember the instructions of our spiritual master. That's how we remain sober. We cannot separate the instructions of our spiritual master from our very life. Just like you cannot separate, if you separate the soul from the body, you die. So if you separate the instructions of your guru from your very life, then you become a candidate for hellish conditions. You suffer. So grihastha life is like that the wife, her actual identity is what? That she's an eternal servant of Krishna. And how is that realized? Because she's initiated disciple of a spiritual master. This is how she's realizing her, this is her identity, and this is the husband's identity. So the wife is actually the property of my spiritual master. So we should never exploit it. We should train that person to be a good devotee, to be a good devotee, to preach Krishna consciousness. Similarly, the wife, she should not see her husband as a facility for material enjoyment. According to Chanaka Pandit, women are so many more times lustier than men. So that means shtri, woman is called shtri. In Sanskrit, shtri means that which expands unlimitedly. So when marriage is there, or when there is relationship between man and woman, in order to enjoy, or whatever, in order to, so much expansion is needed. Wife means that eventually there will be children. Children means so much paraphernalia, means house, furniture, kitchen utensils, cooking pots, rugs, chairs, backyard, front yard, swings for the children, cars, gasoline, a second job to pay for it all, whatever, a house in the country. In this way, expanding. This is the shtri. Woman means shtri, because once there's woman, then there's going to be children. Very rare, unless their impotency is there, there's going to be children. That means so much expansion is there. So this becomes a source of bondage. Pungsha studiya mituni bhavantayar mitu hidai grantimo aho gri kshetra, the griha, sutapta vitaya janasya mohoyam. The body, one's already attached to the body. We're already intoxicated by the body. And from the body, then comes another little body, and some more little bodies. And then house, and then home, and like this, it's described. Janasi moho yamahammameti. One increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. And actually, this is a fact that a person enjoys through his expansions of children. This is why one must be very sober at the moment of conception. One must think, just let me raise children on behalf of Guru and Krishna. Because there's very little sense gratification in this whole thing. It's mostly burden. So if it's going to be a burden, let it be a burden of love. Just like all of us accept responsibilities, temple presidents, gurus, whatever, everyone accepts a burden on behalf of Śrīla Prabhupāda, the spiritual master. So children will be a burden, but let it be a burden of love. Let me raise a saint who can liberate people. That will be my contribution to the Krishna conscious movement. I'll raise a saintly child, he'll go and he'll preach and he'll liberate so many people, like that. So, but in the material conception of life, what happens? What happens is that the father, he enjoys through the son. Because as Prabhupada mentions very nicely in this verse, youth is there only for a few years, then it's gone. From 14 to, what did Prabhupada say? 40 or something, 39 or something. No, he said 30 actually. So that's the period of youth, and the senses are very strong. One can enjoy like that. So that has gone very quickly. Youth passes very quickly, and the balance of the life is... I was reading nicely yesterday, Satsangita Maharaj was saying he was on Sankirtan, and he was watching everyone, how they were acting, all the people on the beach. So he described, the woman is thinking, my form is very charming and attractive. The man is thinking, my form is very muscular. And the middle-aged person is thinking, I'm still keeping it in pretty good shape. And the old man is thinking, yeah, it's old, but what the hell anyway. This is how he described the bodily concept of life. I thought that was nice. So, youth goes very quickly. And generally people misuse youth. They misuse it in sense gratification. Therefore Prabhupada said, too much sex in youth means senility, as the word. You become senile in old age. Again, you become like a child. Children have no intelligence. This is what characterizes a child. He has no intelligence. So old people, they act like children sometimes. They act like less, they're like frivolous, like baby-like. Why? With too much sex? Especially the men. You'll find quite often in India, you'll find especially that generally it's the men who become senile, not so much the women. Because you'll find generally women are more attracted towards religion than men. Prabhupada says this, doesn't he, in the Bhagavatam. That generally women are more attracted, you'll find religions mostly have more women than men. So the women generally maintain the religious traditions of the Vedic culture. Whereas in you'll see nowadays in India, the men, they're more free to enjoy the so-called possibilities of liberated life in Western society. They wear pants, they drink, they go to clubs, movies, you see, like that. So generally the men, because of this tendency towards sense gratification, you'll find they're more senile in old age than the women. Bhagavan Narasimha Dev Ki Jai. So this is scientific. Actually, it's scientific. Because when the man is engaged in too much sex life, then he's giving too much semen away. And the yogi in the Vedic culture, he understands the potency of the semen. That the semen through yoga practice is raised to the brain. And it gives nourishment to the brain it nourishes the finer brain cells so that one can understand God. This body is nothing more than a machine. And if the machine is properly tuned and taken care of, it can perform its function nicely. So the purpose of human life, savai pumsham para dharmo, yato bhaktira doksache, aitu ki apityatya, yayatma surprashidati, is to develop love for Krishna. Through this machine of the human form of life, one can realize God. So the brain is there, meant, the brain is meant for realizing. So it is a very powerful instrument, and it is nourished to the semen. So celibacy is very important. Celibacy is essential in Vedic culture. The semen goes up through the spinal area to the brain and nourishes the brain. So if the semen is wasted in illicit sex life, one has no brain for understanding God. This is one reason people have little interest in Krishna consciousness in Kali Yuga. Because there's so much promiscuity, so much illicit sex life from a very young age, that they don't have a brain which they can understand these things. This is buddhi yoga. Buddhi yoga means the yoga of intelligence. So little intelligence is actually necessary for understanding Krishna consciousness. But according to the gifts of nature, everyone's born with enough intelligence. Human life means enough intelligence. But where there's too much illicit sex life, one spills his intelligence uselessly. And he's thinking, he's enjoying. Just like the example is given of the camel. The camel is chewing the thorns on the tree. And he's chewing and chewing, and the thorns cut his tongue. And what happens is the blood comes. So in chewing the thorns, he's thinking, this is really tasty. So he's a foolish animal. What is he tasting? He's tasting his own blood. He's thinking he's enjoying. This is sex life, actually. Prabhupada said we don't have to go into the detail. But anyway, illicit sex life means enjoying one's own blood. And one loses the intelligence to understand God. So this is why old people are very senile. Because they just misuse their life. Whereas in Vedic culture, the best moment of life is old age. Because one has been learning, cultivating knowledge, cultivating austerity, cultivating his devotion his whole life. So the pinnacle is old age. One is detached from the body, the bodily activities, hankering and lamenting. The material desires have been purified. His intelligence is clean. His mind is pure. The devotion in his heart has become manifest for Krishna. So everyone seeks his association. This is Vedic culture. And nowadays, people become senile, they become useless, whatever. They're put away in old age homes. Or even they kill them. This is something new. This is something in vogue. That the old people, you just give them a little shot, and like your dog, you put them to sleep. Because no one appreciates them. But what is appreciable? The old dog, he used his whole life in sense gratification, selfish sense gratification, exploiting his family members, his friends, his country for sense gratification. So now he's an old man, he can no longer exploit, the senses are weak, the mind is weak, the intelligence is corrupt, the old dog can't do anything. So he's weak to exploit others. He can no longer give sense gratification to his family members. So let's just hide him away in a home and lock the door, pay the bill, let someone else take care of him. But even that becomes too expensive. So make a little phone call. Just give an injection. Oh, he passed away last night. We were shocked. But abortion is also a shocking thing. Some 50 years ago, if you even mentioned the word abortion, people would cringe. Oh, how you can speak like that? Because of so much violence, because basically they're meat eaters, they become atmahana, killer of the soul. This is the nature of a meat eater. He loses his sensitivity for life in general. So therefore it becomes very easy to kill. We see so many wars. People become very insensitive during war because of this tendency for killing so many animals. So abortion nowadays, who even thinks twice? So we think, oh, killing old people? Shocking. But you'll see in 10 or 20 years it won't be shocking. It won't even be shocking to kill your next door neighbor if he cuts the grass the wrong way. This is Kali Yuga. The sages of Naimisharanya 5,000 years ago, they heard one cow was being mistreated. One cow. Maharaj Parikit went out there to chastise the offender. He took out his sword. He was going to kill the rascal just for beating a cow. What to speak of killing a cow? Here we have one bull. He's so nasty, we still take care of him. Isn't it? What's his name? Nakula? You just walk by Nakula, he wants to, he lives to get you. But still we take care of him. To speak of a sweet calf and a sweet cow who just nicely give. So, one cow was being mistreated, and Maharaj Parikha was ready to kill the offender. The sages were shocked. What is this? You can imagine if they had have known what was going to take place later in Kali Yuga. It would have broke their hearts. To speak of children being killed in the womb of the mother. The mother, everyone needs shelter, when you're in the womb of your own mother, and she kills you. This is Kali Yuga. So we shouldn't be shocked that old people will also someday. But Vedic culture was not like that. That due to one's Krishna consciousness, one valued the association of an elderly person, because generally the time element is also important, that if one has practiced Krishna consciousness from the tender age of 5 years, when one reaches old age, there's a pretty good chance, if one's still chanting his rounds, following the principles, serving the spiritual master in the Krishna conscious movement, that person will have developed saintly quality. Yas yasti bhaktir bhavati yakinchana savayagunastatta samasateshura. A devotee naturally develops all the good qualities of the demigods. The process does work. So in old age, Vedic culture meant old age that one would fully renounced, take sannyas, whatever. He would become a preacher, and he would spend the last years of his life preaching Krishna consciousness. And everyone would seek the association of a saintly, elderly people like that. And the elderly ladies, they would give valuable training to the young girls in Krishna consciousness, how to cook, how to maintain family, how to do all these basic necessary functions in human society. They would also be training. They would also be the source of spiritual inspiration for those who took shelter of them. This is Krishna consciousness. This is so wonderful that we can look forward to old age because we're not misusing our youth. Right now, when the senses are powerful and there's strength and enthusiasm and vigor, we're using it all for Prabhupada in Krishna conscious movement. Prabhupada said, "You're all young men. I am an old man." Said, you can work actively to spread Krishna. I'm given the idea. You take the idea, you expand on it, and spread this Krishna conscious movement. So this is how youth should be. We shouldn't lament, oh, we're young, we're missing something out there. We're not missing anything. You look at the faces of those young people, by the time they're 20 years old, they look like they're 40. But you look at the devotees in this room, you can't tell how old they are. You can't tell, because the effulgence is there of Krishna consciousness. Just even celibacy alone gives great vigor and strength to the body. In Gandhi, he became celibate, and Prabhupada said because of his celibacy, he threw out the British, Vimindya. One man's celibacy. It's described in the Bhagavatam, you become celibate, if you remain celibate your whole life, you go at least to Brahma Loka. So there's great strength in celibacy, in renunciation, great power. So, in Krishna consciousness, we follow these regulative principles, not as a source of a persecution and prison, but again, like we said yesterday, these are the regulative principles of freedom. And by following these regulative principles, especially this principle of not having illicit sex, we have the freedom, the privilege, to serve our spiritual master and spread Krishna consciousness. Because it takes strength to preach. To preach Krishna consciousness is not an easy thing, especially in countries like this. You have to be strong. So our strength is coming by following the instructions of our spiritual master. So we should never, ever feel that we have left something out there in the material world. We should never be, I'm trying to think of the word. Anyway, we should never feel that the karmis have something that we don't have. We've given up the source of misery, sense gratification, as we said yesterday. So, therefore, great potency. But we should use our youth in that way. We should use these youthful years to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. And then, that is wonderful. And then also, middle age is coming, and the strength of youth is perhaps going away. But there's so much balance of our life left to serve Krishna. He'll accept our service in so many ways. Patram bhushvam balantayon, even a leaf or a flower, whatever, we've learned the principle. One reaches the middle age, continues going on, and old age, see, a devotee becomes freed from these very basic restrictions or punishments of material life. Just like in the prison house, there's birth, there's four walls to keep the prisoners in. So the conditioned soul in this material world, he's bound by birth, death, old age, and disease. This is how he's bound. These four walls, birth, death, old age, and disease. Difficult to get out. But for a devotee, just like Dhruva Maharaj, when death came, he stepped on the head of death and went back to Godhead. So these are not restrictions for a devotee also. He's not afraid of anything. Abhay Charan. He's already liberated. He's liberated from his own foolish material desires. He's liberated from the desire for sense gratification. He's liberated, a devotee. It's described by Bibhamangal Thakur that liberation waits at the doorstep of a devotee. How can I serve you? So we are liberated from material life. What is our only business left? We have no interest left in this material world. What is left to do? Preach. That's all. That's our only desire. We are iha yasya haradasya kamana manasagira Nicholas Tibia Vastas to Jivan Muktas. One whose body, mind, and words are controlled in the service of Krishna consciousness, service of the Lord, he's considered a liberated soul. So, if we're strictly following, then that liberated state is there. What else is there? Now we're liberated. Now what? We've achieved the same goal that so many transcendentalists want to achieve after many lifetimes. Yogis, jnanis. We've already got it. We've got what they wanted to achieve. We've liberated from this whole nonsense material world it was supposed to be. So what is there left to do? We serve the desire of our spiritual master. Let his desires become desire. We're not desireless. What is our desire? We don't really, we're children in spiritual life, so what is our desire? What did Prabhupada desire? What does our spiritual master desire? Real desire. Preach Krishna consciousness. That's real desire. That's what's left to do. So even these other things that restrict and inhibit and cause great fear to the materialist, to their sense gratification, birth, disease, old age, death, they don't even bother a devotee. Let me take another birth if Krishna wants. Let me serve the Lord of my life. If he wants, I'll take another birth. Just like one time a devotee said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I want to be born again and distribute your books. But that is first class, Prabhupada. Very good desire. So, then disease. If disease is coming, a devotee is thinking, yes, due to my sinful activities for so many lifetimes, forgetting the Lord, I committed so many abominable activities, so now this reaction is coming. So let it purify me. Sri Dayananda Maharaj gave a very nice explanation of difficulty. After one becomes initiated, sometimes even they're still suffering. Sometimes devotees ask the question, well, if the spiritual master took all my karma, then why all these miseries are coming? So many problems, disease, whatever. So Sri Dayananda Maharaj gave a nice explanation in the 11th canto. He said that Krishna, just to remind the devotee of the nature of the material world, he sometimes lets them experience these reactions. So disease, oh yes, this material world is a terrible place. Let me become more serious in Krishna consciousness. So we should see it like that. If there's difficulty, if there's disease, whatever, then we should think, oh yes, the Lord, he's reminding me that I'm not the enjoyer, that I'm the servant of Krishna. And whatever foolishness is still in my heart to try to enjoy this material world, let me give it up. Let it go away with it, because this reaction I'm suffering is because I tried to enjoy separately from Krishna. In some way or other, I tried to act independently. I enjoyed sense gratification in some way. And sense gratification always means suffering. It always means, not that sometimes, yes, sometimes you get away with it. I actually enjoyed and, you know, Krishna didn't see or whatever. It always ends, some way or other, will always end in some type of misery. So, disease is coming, reminding me that I was a rascal. Okay, so let me give it up. And then old age. Old age means Krishna's right around the corner. This is a devotee. Materialistic people, when old age comes, just try to understand what old age is for a karmi. It's not that because they're old that they've given up their material desires. Those desires are as strong or stronger than they were when they were young. So we know how strong material desires are in youth. They're very powerful. They drag us. Matirna Krishne Pratasvatova Mitobi Bhajatangrihava Tanam. They drag us to hell. So powerful. Even they take away the intelligence. But those desires are still there. It's not that those desires ever become what is the word when you put a fire out? Extinguished. Prabhupada's classic example is putting kerosene on the fire and becomes bigger and bigger. So from that example, we can conclude logically that old age means so much frustration because the desires are raging like anything, but the senses are incapable of fulfilling. Just like a baby. Why are babies always crying? Because they want to say, they have a desire, but they can't express it. They can't speak. They can't communicate. See? They have some pain in the stomach because of drinking the mother's milk. They're crying, they're crying. Some mother thinks, oh, my child's hungry, let me give him some milk. So they put the bottle in the mouth. Drink! It's very frustrating because their body cannot satisfy their desires. So old age is the same thing. They return again to this incapacitated, foolish position of being unable to satisfy their desires. They can't control their senses. And the desires are very strong. So therefore, what are old people always doing? Talking about the old days. Isn't it characteristic of old people? Prajalpa. See, playing cards and speaking, yeah, when I was young it was like this and I used to do like... Reliving the moments in their gramakata, in their talk of all kinds of... This is a person also has his experiences in speaking and remembering. So Prabhupada said material life means hankering and lamenting. A little enjoyment squeezed in, but it's just gone like that. So hankering for sense gratification, hankering. Youth means hankering, never satisfied. A young person never, because the burning desire is there, the kerosene on the fire. Hankering. Finally, middle age is coming. Still make a last effort. 40, 45, 50. Just make a last go at it. You know, try to enjoy, you know. I'm not satisfied yet, but if I just get that, I'm going to be satisfied. And all of a sudden, old age is there. All the energy is gone. The life force is defeated. But it's still, the hankering is there. So what is there to look forward to in material life? Nothing. But just see how nice Krishna consciousness is. And in the youth, we're enjoying Krishna consciousness, preaching, actively engaged, serving our spiritual master, worshiping the deity, printing books, distributing books, opening temples. We're active, we're young. We're going on like that. And in middle age, we'll make a last effort. Let's open up one more temple before we reach old age. Print one last book. That was Prabhupada's mood. Prabhupada was like a young man, even on his deathbed. He was still preaching Krishna consciousness. One more purport, like that. And old age will come. And then maybe we can sit and chant somewhere. But if we're lucky, we'll still have some life left, like Śrīla Prabhupāda, and we can preach to the last minute. This is so wonderful, Krishna consciousness movement. Old days, they're simply speaking about the old days. We're speaking about Krishna. Right around the corner, old age. We're not afraid. We're old. What does that mean, old? It means we're going to give up this body. Useless body anyway. What is it? Okay, it helped me serve Krishna, but it's actually an obstacle I want to dance in kirtan for 20 hours. I can only dance for half an hour. What is this body? It's getting older. I want to sing, and the vocal cords, they're... chance you've gone back to be with Krishna because you were hearing the holy names. So he said Krishna was very merciful to you because he took away your diseased body and gave you a body which was suitable for serving him in the spiritual sky. But this we can have an inkling of an understanding. Even in the infancy, our neophyte nature of devotional service, we can see that there's a good possibility that our desires for Krishna consciousness will increase and this body will limit us. Just like the gopis. The gopis, they're pure devotees of the Lord. And they were cursing Lord Brahma. You nonsense! You created this body. And it blinks. So for a fraction of a second, we can't see Krishna. The Lord of our life is before us. And we have to blink and not see him for one fraction of a second. You rascal. Of course, if the gopis curse you, that's a great blessing. But that's how they're... So we also think this body is... We have so many plans for spreading this Krishna conscious movement, but as time goes on, this body it's just discouraging, like that. So we also become discouraged, but that discouragement is an impetus for serving Krishna, whereas their discouragement is a source of unlimited lamenting. It's like you go on Sangirtan, you go door to door, you meet people. And immediately they open their hearts. They're lamenting, isn't it? When you actually discuss with people, this is the beauty of Sangirtan, that people just open up to a devotee. They often say, I felt like I've known you for a long time, or you're my friend. Often devotees have this experience. So they open up their hearts, and what do they have to say? The sad story. It's never a happy story, it's always a sad story. Whenever you talk to a devotee, Prabhupada said, whenever you meet a devotee, he specifically says that whenever two sannyasis meet, they automatically talk of Krishna. So we're all like that, that we're all engaged actively in the service of the Lord. So we just, when we meet, we just enjoy talking about Krishna. Whereas karmis, all they know about is suffering. So they just exchange their realizations. Do you know how hard it is? Why? I have a harder time. No, it's harder for me. And yes, and they cry. Misery loves company. Just like yesterday, I had long conversations with Satchinandana Prabhu. He's one devotee I always wanted to meet, but I was never able to meet him because of so many different circumstances. So when we meet yesterday, automatically we're talking about Krishna. There's no shyness, there's no hesitancy, there's no fear. Immediately, there's just the contact of two Vaishnavas produces Krishna Katha. So we spent hours and the time went by so quickly like that. So this is Krishna consciousness. This is Prabhupada says here that his new life and youth expired in half a moment. So when one is enjoying, time goes very quickly. But one is suffering, isn't it? Time goes very slowly. If you've ever been injured or you've ever experienced excruciating pain, even though it may last for one moment, it seems like a long time, isn't it? If you had this experience, if something very painful in the body, oh, it lasts such a long time. It actually was just a few seconds like that. So if we spend our life in Krishna consciousness, chanting our 16 rounds, following the four-legged principles, serving the spiritual master according to his instruction, and life just goes by so quickly. But think of the position of the materialistic people who are always suffering in the material world. Life is such a painful thing. It lasts such a long time. Finally, merciful death is coming, taking it away. Sometimes they even take their own lives, isn't it? Because it's so painful and it's dragging on for so long. Let me finish it. Ugh. But Krishna consciousness frees us from this. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatmana Sochati Nakanchati. On this platform of Brahman, or spiritual life, Brahma Bhuta Prasanna, life is joyful at every moment. And even the difficulties, they become a source of surrender, and more surrender means more satisfaction. whatever. Even there's difficulty for a devotee, even distress or great pain for a devotee. Even he's not experiencing it in the same way as a karmi. He's experiencing it in a Krishna conscious way. So ultimately it's a source of enlightenment or happiness for a devotee. So we have only this to look forward to. We have only Brahma Shukam. Nayam Deho Deha Bhajam Niloke Kishtam Kam Arte Vidbhujam Ye Tapo Divyam Putra Yinat Satvam. I lost the last line. Brahma Shukam Tvanantam. Anyway, that this life of Krishna consciousness means Brahma Shukam, unlimited transcendental happiness. So let us not spoil it by in any way thinking that we have left something behind or thinking the karmis have something that we don't have. We've given up that life. It's in the past. It's gone. We have only the present and the future to look forward to in Krishna consciousness. We observe it strictly, as we were speaking in the beginning of the class. This verse is specifically about sex life, so we also have our classes in sex education, so to speak. Prabhupada is speaking very openly like this. We also speak strongly like that, that there's no allowance for illicit sex in Krishna consciousness. It will also be the source of misery. It's our enemy number one, as Prabhupada said one time, regarding your enemy number one, Mr. Lust. He wrote in a letter to Bodhi, regarding your enemy number one, Mr. Lust. So lust, sex desire, is a formidable opponent, formidable opposition. But if we're strict in Krishna consciousness, we follow the rules and regulations very carefully, we don't misuse the mercy of our spiritual master, we can conquer this strong desire and obtain the mercy of Guru and Krishna. That will be our success. So I'll read the translation again. My dear King Prachini Barishat, in this way, King Paranjan, with his heart full of lust and sinful reactions, began to enjoy sex with his wife, and in this way, his new life and youth expired in half a moment. So, are there any questions or comments? Yes. That's Krishna's instruction in Bhagavad Gita. Actually, everyone's fallen in Kali Yuga. And because of men's intimate association with women, they lose their intelligence, become less intelligent like women. So actually, this statement of less intelligence, it applies to everyone. Because by too much association with a woman, a man loses his good qualities, his superior qualities to understand Krishna, and his ability to perform the tapasya and austerity, which is there in Vedic culture. Generally, women cannot do that. So therefore, generally, yogis are men. And because of that ability to perform tapasya and austerity, they advance in spiritual life and their ability to understand the scripture. But in Kali Yuga, there's so much association with the woman that the man loses these good qualities. So everyone is equal like that. So Namo Mahabhadanaya, Krishna Prema Pradayate. With the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, everyone can be delivered. Because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that the woman, the Sudra, the fallen Brahman, whatever, they can all approach, they can all come to the supreme destination. So, yes, by the mercy of the Lord, everyone can be a candidate for devotional service. There's no bars holding. One time in San Francisco, we were with Prabhupada and he was giving a lecture, and one lady raised her hand, and very aggressively she said, because Prabhupada was speaking strongly about these points and someone may misunderstand, so she said, yes, what do you think about woman's liberation? What is your thought about that? So Prabhupada didn't know about this movement yet. This was 69 or whatever. He didn't know about woman's liberation movement. So she said, what do you think about woman's liberation? Prabhupada said, yes. In Hare Krishna movement, all the women are liberated. So he gave the proper answer to that question. Well, I wanted to mention one other point about the fire. So the fire is always there. So therefore, we have to always be careful. This is the point about Grihastha Ashram, that it's not a license for sense gratification, but not that because I become married, the woman is no longer fire. She's still fire. So fire can do two things. Fire can purify or fire can destroy. Like when you want to purify an instrument for an operation, you can put fire to it, it will purify. But that fire can also burn and destroy. But whatever the situation, you have to always be careful in handling fire. Even if it's meant for purification, the doctor, because he's purifying the instrument, he doesn't put his finger in there because it'll burn his finger away. So this is the point. In associating between men and women, there's always a sense of formality, even in the Grihastha Ashram. One has to always be careful because the Grihastha Ashram means purification. If one's properly being a good Grihastha, man and woman are living together for the purpose of Krishna consciousness, raising Krishna conscious children, serving the deity together, or preaching, whatever, then that association will purify and they'll make advancement. But if they misuse it, then that same fire will burn. But whatever the case, there always has to be a sense of caution there. For brahmacharis and sannyasi, there's no association other than what is absolutely necessary. But grihastha, there is association for training and preaching, whatever. But if still you have to be careful because the fire can, any moment if you're inattentive, burn myself, like when you're cooking, you know. If you just, for a moment, you just turn away and then whatever, you splash and, I splashed some ghee, I got burnt. You see? So whenever there's relationships between men and women, there always has to be this formality there, some soberness in the dealings. And if the soberness is there, then men and women can live together harmoniously in Krishna consciousness, as Prabhupada introduced in the Western world, but we shouldn't be inattentive to this instruction that the relationship is not meant for sense gratification, it's meant for Krishna consciousness. Then temple will be spiritual atmosphere. If there's other intentions, then the atmosphere will be polluted. Why isn't business also preaching? Business can also be preaching. Everything is difficult in spiritual life. Prabhupada said, I never said this preaching is easy. So whatever we do can be difficult, but it depends on our motivation. Because even, for instance, a book distributor, he has to constantly associate with the material energy. So a businessman, he also has to constantly associate with the material energy. As Prabhupada many times told us, it's not what you do, it's the consciousness by which you execute it. So if we can really understand this instruction, then we can envision a society just like they have now, but without sinful activity. In other words, whatever they're doing, it can be done for Krishna. And actually, if we want to see our Krishna conscious movement expand, we'll have to envision all types of people taking up devotional service. Of course, it may not happen, but philosophy is there, that a devotee should be strong enough through his following of regulative principles and his basic sadhan, he should be strong enough to tackle the material energy in any way which is required. So if that means doing business to support the temple or to support Krishna conscious activity, then one shouldn't hesitate. One shouldn't think, I'm afraid I have to associate with the karmis in so many ways. We'll never compromise by accepting their sinful activities. But we see that Prabhupada was appreciated throughout India because he was able to preach according to time and circumstance without compromising. He came to the West and introduced the Vedic culture and preached in so many ways that no one would even think about doing previously. There's actually an injunction somewhere in the Vedas that a saint, a sadhu, should not cross the ocean over Bharadvasa because of he may fall down into sense gratification. But Prabhupada came to the West and he dovetailed so many things. So hopefully in the future we'll see that devotees will be strong enough to do whatever is necessary to spread Krishna consciousness. And certainly if someone has a propensity for business and he's good at it and he can remain Krishna conscious, then that will be as valuable a contribution as someone who's distributing books. Because where does the money come to print the books? It comes from, well, we have to get the money somehow. So this is Lord Chaitanya's instruction on several occasions to his devotees in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He told Kurma Brahma, you don't leave your family, you stay, and you do whatever you're doing, but chant Hare Krishna. And other devotees also, he told them. So the point is, wherever one is best situated, he situates himself like that. If one has a tendency for brahmachari renunciation, sannyas, and he likes to travel and preach, great. But if a grihastha has a propensity for managing, administrating, making money, great. Everyone situated. This is the beauty of the Vanashram Dharma, that each element of society complements the other. They don't work against each other, but they actually complement, and they have one purpose. It's like the body has different parts, and you can't say the hand is inferior to the stomach, because without the hand, the stomach's not going to get food. So the hand plays an integral role. So in the same way, all these different ashrams and varnas are actually meant to complement each other, and with the ultimate that can be there if there's the ultimate goal of Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada said, to spread this movement we need capital and men. So some people may be better suited for making men, some may be better suited for making money, but if we really want to see our movement expand throughout society, we'll have to be able to envision all sorts of people who are freed from sinful activities, engaging in Krishna consciousness and spreading this movement in many ways. So there's a risk in doing business, but there's a risk in anything you do in Krishna consciousness. The point is the motivation behind it. If the motivation is pure or becoming purified by chanting 16 rounds every day, following the principles and reading Prabhupada books and keeping association with devotees, then we'll see that people who have that propensity, that will be a great asset. That will also be preaching. And but preaching is also raising children. That's also preaching. It's like a long-term investment. And one may think in the beginning, I'm not getting anything out of this. But an intelligent person, he can see the value of a long-term investment. So even if one is not able, if one is able and one has the opportunity, then he should be actively engaged in what we may call direct preaching. But if someone has to sit at home and raise children, they should not lament that they're not preaching. If we're raising those children for the purpose of Krishna consciousness, that's a long-term investment, that's also preaching. So everyone can be satisfied according to his propensity in Krishna consciousness. But it's the motivation behind it. Does that answer your question? I know what you mean about, going into the business world, but if one is spiritually strong, then he can serve Krishna like that. But you have to be spiritually strong to do anything in Krishna consciousness. Nothing's simple. We're working against the material energy, so nothing is easy. So therefore we can never become complacent or compromise in these principles. And on the basis of these principles and the mercy of our spiritual master, we should be ready to do whatever is necessary. Even become a politician, I guess. See, politicians, they're the worst people, politicians. But if necessary, one might even have to become a politician for Krishna. This is the real spirit of renunciation, that we should not reject something which can be used in Krishna's service. And when the time is right and we're qualified, perhaps Krishna will give us these bigger responsibilities and roles to play. But our life will always remain the simple devotee. We just chanting and taking prasadam and associating with each other. And if we have to do something which is considered very big or whatever for Guru and Krishna, we'll step forward and do it. But in our hearts, we'll always remain very simple. We're just a servant. And if Krishna wants this to be done, then we have to accept Chaitasa Sarvakamani Mai Sannyasimatpara Buddhi Yogam Apasritam Machita Sataram Ram. In all activities and for the result, simply depend upon me, Krishna says, and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. So whatever order we may get from Guru Gauranga, we should have faith that along with that order will come the strength to execute it. The spiritual master never asks his disciple to do something impossible. Krishna is not going to give us something, some service which is going to make us fall down. So if it becomes apparent that, you know, we need to get more books out, then we should feel that Krishna will give us the strength to do it. And if it necessitates becoming expert in business, then we should feel that Krishna will give us the necessary qualifications to do that. This is how we should feel. And now we should prepare ourselves, because there are great responsibilities that lie ahead for us in the future. They're already there, but there'll be so many things that we'll be asked to do, perhaps in this lifetime. So we'll need to become ready. So maybe that's a sign I should stop speaking. Any other questions? Well, the line's already drawn. No meat eating, no intoxication, no sex, and no gambling. So a devotee won't in any way become involved, either directly or indirectly. He will never compromise. But there's sufficient means and ways to serve Krishna in any capacity that one doesn't have to become involved. There's so many businesses and types of businesses, and not only business but other activities which can serve Krishna where a devotee doesn't have to compromise. So just like you, when you're on Sangatan, you can go in a store and there's varieties of food that you can eat. And if you're very strict, then you know, even though something may be vegetarian, whatever, I know in some parts of the movement devotees don't eat grains which are cooked by karmis, but they'll eat fruits and milk products. So the devotee won't compromise like that in his execution of devotional service. So that's the definition of over-endeavor, that you know, one may do so much, but then if he forgets Krishna, what's the use? So we can accept so many things, but we'll never accept sinful activity. And within that category of acceptance, there's unlimited service. You don't have to worry. There's unlimited service. Well, that's nice if we can do that. If it's not practical for preaching, then we have to do otherwise, but not engage in gross sinful activity. The same question was raised to Prabhupada. He said, if you buy the milk and you offer it to Krishna, then it's purified. Like that. So we have to be practical also. We can't be fanatic. Of course, we won't break the regular principles, but utility is also the principle. So, you know, milk products, which may be in combination with the meat industry, you know, it'd be nice if we could raise our own milk on our farms, but if we can't do that, we still have to drink milk, because that's a religious principle. So we'll buy milk from the Karmis. We won't buy eggs, but we'll buy milk. So man's glory lies in his common sense. So we have to also apply our common sense and understand the principle that utility is the principle without compromising. That's why a little intelligence is needed. Anything else? Questions? Comments? Gantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.